Because we left the spouse till last yesterday, we'll briefly hear from the representative of the spouses conference first today before we move on to the theme for today, which is the covenant. I'm pleased that we have with us today Alice Chung, the wife of Bishop, it's Paul, isn't it?
Roger.
Wrong again. Roger Chung, the Bishop of the Diocese of Antsiranana in Madagascar. So, Alice, if you'd like to come, would you like to prefer to speak from there? Okay, good.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
Today the session that we had is actually how God's equipping God's people for his church. So today, many women, we have been able to share stories, what we are doing in our countries. And, for example, from the Congo, how they are caring for the women who have been sexually raped because due to war. And then Burundi, how they are picking up the orphans and trying to find homes, you know, for these kids. And, we have gone to Madagascar 5 years ago, and I gave up my job, and I talk a little bit about our project, which is really creating an income-generating project and enabling women to be empowered through that, through education, through literacy programs. And we do mainly handicraft embroidery.
Okay. A couple of quick questions for Alice, if anybody would like to ask anything about the spouses program. Thank you.
Steve Waring, Living Church Magazine. What was your job before you gave it up?
I was a product development manager in Mauritius, in a knitwear, in a huge knitwear factory.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Alice, for making that long walk for a short time, but we appreciate your presence with us.
Pleasure.
Thank you. The theme for the day is the Anglican Covenant. The bishops have just had their first Indaba session on the Covenant. There is unusually a second Indaba session scheduled for this afternoon, and this work will be carried forward tomorrow. So a beginning has been made. Just to give you a sense of what's going on, just a few words about my own experience in the Indaba group this morning. We split into smaller groups to look at the text of the covenant, and my group worked through the covenant right through to up to but not including the procedural appendix at the end. And while we made a couple of suggestions about editorial changes, there was agreement in principle to the covenant from among the small group I was in. There is commitment to hanging together as a communion and working through things together as a communion. A recognition, I think, that some of the responsibilities and obligations that attach to being in communion have not been well respected in recent years, and we've encountered difficulties as a result of that. So the covenant is seen, I think, positively and hopefully as a vehicle for redressing some of those mistakes going forward. How it spins out in the rest of the conference and beyond remains to be seen, but the initial signals that I've picked up are positive. We have with us Archbishop Drexel Gomez, the primate of the West Indies and the chair of the Covenant Design Group. He's really the expert about the covenant's history and content and where it goes from here. And we also have Bishop Trevor Mwamba, the Bishop of Botswana, to reflect with us on the covenant. So I'll ask Archbishop Drexel to speak first and then Trevor to follow.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I was given the impossible task of giving a brief comment on the covenant design, the work of the Covenant Design Group. We were commissioned by the Archbishop of Canterbury in response to a recommendation from the Windsor Report that was issued in 2004 to examine and make proposals about an Anglican covenant. The context of the mandate was the existing situation in the Anglican Communion, in which there is some dispute and some fragmentation that is going on. And we set about our task to produce a mechanism that is badly needed in Anglicanism, because to date we have no mechanism for solving our problems. The only process we have utilized so far is holding meetings. And Desmond Tutu once said that one consistent aspect of Anglicanism is that we meet. So we meet and we meet and we meet. But we have no legal framework, no real magisterium that says, you had your discussion, this is it. It is against that context that we began our work. But we did not even think about going a legalistic or a contract route. What we sought to do was, first of all, to find a mechanism that would redefine the basic tenets of Anglicanism and call the members of the communion across the world to rally around who we are and what we stand for. So we have three sections. One, the first, that, well, our introduction deals with the theology of being in communion. This is the theology that is expounded by the Windsor Report, which recommended the future for Anglicanism as finding autonomy in communion. The communion is made up of 38 independent provinces, and each province is autonomous. And we have to find a way of respecting and maintaining the autonomy of each church, but at the same time providing a breadth and a scope for communion. That is, how we interrelate, respecting and retaining our autonomy, but also respecting our communion, and seeking to act in such a way that will hold the two together, that we will not seek to act that would destroy the communion or the unity that is a gift to us from God. So autonomy in communion meant searching for the deep roots of Anglicanism. And so section one deals with our inherited faith, the faith that we share, which we emphasize the common faith. And then we say, in the light of the common faith we hold, we should be able to make these commitments to work together and hold together. We look in the next section at our common mission, the mission given to us by God, how we can embrace that and engage in it. And then thirdly, we look at the consequences and the commitments that flow out of working together. Now, we believe that what we have produced does enable Anglicans across the communion to revisit the tenets of Anglicanism, to say, is this the faith that we have been taught? Is this the faith that we possess? So that Anglicans would be assisted in this business of self-understanding and the self-description of Anglicanism for Anglicans, but will also help us in our relation, in our ecumenical relations, because I chair the Inter-Anglican Standing Commission on Ecumenical Relations. And so, very often in our work, our ecumenical partners say to us, who are the Anglicans? Because we have one type that say this, another type say this. So we will help our ecumenical partners if we can state clearly and simply and unequivocally who we are as Anglicans. Now, I believe that we have done a fairly good job in detailing the heart of Anglicanism, our common faith that we've received from the biblical tradition, the early church and the fathers, and our inheritance from the Reformation period. Anglicanism is Reform Catholicism, and we have sought to retain and emphasize that in our document. Our overall aim is to work towards holding the Anglican communion together, not inventing something new, but simply providing a mechanism that brings us back to the center about who we are and what we believe, and to renew our commitment to journey forward together. And I want to close by saying we did not attempt at any of our sessions to produce a document that would deal with the present issues before the communion. Our document is future-directed, that this is how the communion should deal with events as they unfold in the future. That is, draw people back to the common faith, the common mission, and the common commitments that are inherent in Anglicanism. We believe that that is the way forward for our communion. And so far, as Bishop Philip has said, in the group of which I'm a member, there seems to be a general consensus about the way forward for a covenant, but the argument now is about the details, looking at the actual text and suggesting ways of improving the text. And the committee that I chair has planned to meet at the end of September, when we will review the responses from the bishops at this conference and take them on board and re-examine our texts. But we will wait until April of next year, because the provinces of the communion have been asked to send in their comments as provinces by March. So the committee will meet in April in London, when we will produce the third text or the third draft to be sent to the Anglican Consultative Council, which meets in Jamaica in the West Indies in May. So our process here at Lambeth is seeking the comments of the Bishop Assembly and seeking for a steer, giving a kind of direction for the work of the design group, taking those suggestions on board, wait for the province's comments, and then do a third draft, which will be an attempt to respond to what the bishops have said, but also what the provinces have said. So we have a document that does not reflect simply the views and opinions of the members of the design group, but reflects the suggestions and comments that have come from the whole province. So it will become a communion document, and in a very real sense, produced by the input from the various strata of the communion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Grace. I'd just like to go deeper in talking about the covenant in the context of its spirit, its soul. And I'd like to echo what Bishop Philip and Archbishop Gomez have said in the context of the Indaba groups, that in my own Indaba group, there is an overwhelming consensus on the need to uphold the communion and to preserve the rich heritage that we share together. Now, the soul or spirit of the covenant, one would like to perceive this in the context of a covenant of friendship. A covenant of friendship. Maya Angela, in one of our books, this entitled End Taking Nothing for My Journey Now, Reflections of Aspects of Life and so forth, has one particular reflection which she titles Passports to Understanding. And in there, she simply talks about the need for all of us, as it were, to get out of our boundaries, our cultures, our contexts, our safe zones, and explore the wider world out there. Because often we look at things beyond ourselves as being perhaps threatening, and we treat other people as enemies, and simply because we've not ventured beyond to discover and dialogue with them to discover that, in fact, they're in many ways just like us. So when you do travel to other countries, other cultures, you do discover different philosophies, different ways of looking at it. But you also discover that those people who you fear have the same aspirations, the same needs, and so forth. So by journeying, you end up becoming friends. And this covenant of friendship, the soul of the covenant, as I like to perceive it, is one which enables us as Anglicans, because we all come from different parts of the world, different cultures, and we are different. And yet, we are bound by this common heritage, and the whole idea is that we will need to discover each other and become friends. And you do not fear friends, you fear enemies. So the covenant, it should not be looked at as a covenant of enemies, where you begin to have regulations and policies that are there to penalize and put people in a state of fear. But you need a covenant that respects others, or a covenant of mutual respect, a covenant of mutual reverence, a covenant of mutual honor, mutual cooperation, and indeed mutual goals. And in this context, then, the spirit of the covenant, as we are looking at it going forward, will be one which enhances the beauty of Anglicanism, really. And what is that? It is its capacity to absorb different viewpoints and views and bring them all together and see the contribution that they can make in building up this, as it were, kaleidoscope and colorful beauty of life that we have. So that's where we as bishops, in looking at a covenant, are focusing on, to create eventually something that will give life, enhance our humanity, and not destroy. So a covenant of the spirit of friendship. Thank you.
Okay, questions? Yes.
Yes. Tess, you said from the Anglican Journal. How serious are bishops about having a covenant? Because I understand that less than 6 provinces have even given their views about the first draft.
Speak from there, Bishop. That's okay, fine. Sorry. Yeah, just into the microphone.
While it is true that we didn't get as many responses from the provinces, we did receive responses from over a dozen provinces and several individual responses and some group comments. So we were given a lot of material to work with. A large block of the African provinces, for example, had indicated verbally their general support for the covenant, but they didn't send in any written comments. But as a block, they have indicated that they were in support of a covenant.
Yes, sir.
Archbishop Gomez, there's been some waxing and waning in previous drafts as to the specific heart of Anglicanism as defined in the formularies, the 1662, the 39 articles, and the ordinal. I wonder if that they will be specifically mentioned in subsequent drafts.
Just tell us who you are, where you're from.
I'm Craig O'Brien, the Anglican Planet.
Thank you.
That's one of the issues that has been raised in most of the hearings that we have had, and it's something we will be addressing at our next meeting. But there's no attempt to deny that the formularies are at the heart of Anglicanism. That's acknowledged in both texts, both of the Nassau draft and the St. Andrew's draft. That as a fact is stated as a fact, but it's a question of itemizing them and giving the details.
I think those formularies actually have different legal status around the different provinces, so it's a question of recognising their historical significance but not stating that in such a way that makes it impossible for some provinces to sign up to the covenant. So it's worded very carefully. Yes, sir.
The Reverend Todd Wetzel with Anglican Voice. Can a document, and it is a question, can a document be built on a principle which is incorrect, that resolves issues? For example,
can I ask you just to state the principle which you think is incorrect?
Preserving the full autonomy of all individuals party to the agreement, and preserving the full community with all individuals party to the agreement.
Yes, okay, thank you. Archbishop?
What we say in the document is that the parties to the covenant who have their autonomy also recognize the common good as expressed in the communion, and that they will do nothing to break up the common good. so that in a sense, the loyalty to the communion facilitates a holding back on autonomy that the pardon the church will enter into voluntarily. So that in the end, that's the meaning of the expression autonomy in communion, that it is expressed in communion. And if it is in communion, then you will always respect the common good in any decision or any action that you undertake.
Autonomy simply means self-rule, and it is a fact that each of our provinces is self-ruling. They have their own bodies of law, and there's no central law. But entering the covenant is a self-limitation in order to remain in communion.
But the communion is not a fact.
Reza?
Excuse me, we have that thought from the garden. You said that the covenant was future-led, and it wasn't to address the present situation, the past actions, but it was about dealing with things that involved the future.
Yes.
The Windsor Continuation Group, their observations suggest that their concerns are retroactive as well as present and future. Now, while I appreciate the objectives of both groups are very different, there just seems to be a disconnect between the tone and the objectives between the two. So which direction are we moving in?
Thank you.
Well, the tone is a bit of a subjective criterion to use. I think what the Windsor Continuation Group is saying to the communion here at Lambeth, in faithfulness to the Windsor Report, there are still issues that have to be dealt with by the communion. And they have identified some of those issues. And they are saying that as we move towards a covenant, certain actions should be taken in these areas. But it is in no way attempting to preempt the covenant.
Thank you, George.
Bishop, go ahead. Will you continue as chairman of the design group after your retirement in December? What are your plans?
Well, the plan is certainly to go until May next year.
Till the ACC meeting. At the back, sir.
Yes, Kevin Carlson, Anglican TV. You discussed the love for Anglicans to have meetings. What happens when this covenant is violated? Is that just a course for more and more meetings?
What we are presently working on is the appendix to the present text, which tries to set out the ways in which those things will be dealt with. But that's very much in a preliminary draft. It has not received the full consultation of even the entire design group. But it's something that we will be paying great attention to at our September meeting.
Do you want to add anything to that, Trevor, Bishop Trevor? What happens when the covenant's broken?
Well, it's a work in progress, and these are some of the issues that will be discussed in the process of working out how the covenant will affect all of us.
I think I would simply add that the whole idea of the covenant is about people by consent entering into it. It's not a stick to whack people over the head with. So if people enter into it voluntarily, then the expectation is they will observe it.
Robert
Pegger, BBC. Could you describe in very simple terms the nature of the organisation that would judge whether people were in or out of agreement with the government and what sanctions would be available? I know you've just addressed that. But there's been talk of diminished status within the community. Is that how it would unfold? Would there be an outer tier for people who weren't part of the government?
Our design group has not directly addressed those issues, and we were not inclined to give detailed consideration to consequences. We wanted to deal with the framework to make sure we had the framework right. And that is going to be the next area that will receive our undivided attention.
Not by the end of this conference,
though? No, not in this conference, no.
Yeah, Klaus Nelson from the German Catholic News Agency. Do you also listen to the voices that are not present at Lambeth Conference? Today there was this whole critique of the Archbishop Urambi, who was questioning the way of the role of the Archbishop of Canterbury. Do you also discuss the role of and how he is appointed the Archbishop of Canterbury?
We have already dealt with that in both of our drafts, the Nassau draft and the present St. Andrew's draft. But may I just say that what we have placed before the communion represents the result of consultation from a wide spectrum across the whole communion. It isn't driven by the Archbishop. and it isn't driven by the Church of England. We have received comments from various provinces and various groups across the communion.
It's been well known, if I might add, for a long, long time, that the covenant and the role of the instruments of communion were going to be a major topic for discussion at this conference. It's a sadness that Archbishop Arombi is not here to make his contribution to that discussion.
Yes, sir. Bill Bader, Church Times. If it's meant to represent the soul of the Anglican communion, will it be beautiful?
Well, again, I believe that section one that we have produced does capture the spirit of Anglicanism, and I think beautifully. But again, that could be a subjective opinion.
I mean, my response to that would be yes. I mean, it is meant to be a vehicle for grace and self-limitation and mutual support and encouragement. So to that extent, I think it will be beautiful. Yes, sir.
Martin Beckford, Daily Telegraph. We were told by Canon Gregory Cameron this morning that it may take at least two meetings of the TEC General Convention, i.e. 6 years, to vote on the covenant. With the way things are going with the GAFCON movement and divisions in the TEC, do you have any hope that the covenant, you know, by that time there'll still be any communion to keep together?
Well, I'm an optimist by nature, so, and I believe firmly that the Anglican communion is going to continue by God's grace and in the divine providence. We do have problems, and it is interesting for me that the leaders of GAFCON, except one, are not present, but all of the groups represented at GAFCON have up until May of this year commented positively on the covenant. And so I would be surprised to know if they have had a change of heart. If they had, they have not communicated that to me. But all of the churches of the Global South have committed to support the covenant principle.
Bishop Trevor, you want to add to that?
I concur with the Archbishop and that the Anglican communion will continue. We're not in a hurry. Only the devil is in a hurry. So what we want to do is a thorough job and so on, and so it will continue.
Time for a couple more, I think. Ruth, and then you, madam.
Both bishops, I'd be very interested if you could tell us a little bit about what was said in your Indaba groups this morning about the covenant. And if my hearing is that the discontent with the covenant is not from the Global South, but from the TEC and the Liberal wing of the TEC. What would you do if TEC or another province, such as Scotland, for example, refused to sign up to it?
That's a decision that will have to be made by the communion. We have not addressed that. What we are working at now is producing something that we believe that will gain acceptance by at least a majority of the provinces. But it is an issue that we will have to deal with as a communion. When we reach the point of having the covenant, we will have to make space, in my own opinion, for those who can sign up yet. I believe that we will always leave the door open for persons to enter who don't feel they can enter at a particular time.
I would just add to that, it will be difficult, I believe, in every province of the communion for that province to make a decision to enter into the covenant, because at the heart of Anglicanism is this notion of autonomy, of self-rule. It's very much at the heart of Anglicanism. And so provinces will guard that very jealously. And it will only be as a result of deep and careful reflection that they agree to self-limit in order to protect something which is equally valuable, and that is our communion. Mm-hmm. It won't be an easy process. Okay. Madam, yes.
Savitri Hensman, Lesbian and Gay Christian Movement. Does the Covenant for Communion and Mission offer a constructive way forward that's more in keeping with the spirit of mutuality displayed at this Lambeth Conference than a more legalistic approach?
I'm familiar with the covenant that they have produced, but our covenant draft is formulated on the principle of mutuality and communion. And it is not a legalistic document, and it is not a punitive document. It seeks to preserve the communion and the working together. We see it as a pilgrimage. All of the Anglicans are on this pilgrimage, and we are seeking to provide a mechanism that will help us to walk easier along the pilgrimage and to avoid some of the road bumps that we have encountered in the past.
A final word, Bishop Trevor?
Yes, I mean, the covenant will address the issue of space, in the context that we come from different cultures and the provinces are different. So it will try and enhance that uniqueness. So these are some of the issues that we're looking at, that this covenant should address the space that is needed for individual provinces, dioceses, to develop in the local context as well.
We'll have to call a halt there. It's after 2 and we're due up the road. As you leave today, please collect the 2 additional pages to the reflections document. We haven't reproduced the whole 18 pages of it, but the page which has been drafted on the Bible and mission is available for you, and the draft of the page on human sexuality is available to you today, and the hearing this afternoon will be about those 2 pages. We'll have a second bite at covenant tomorrow, so if you've got more questions about covenant, we'll take them up then. Thank you very much.